Hello and welcome to Russians with Attitude. Today's special guest is an American journalist, Jackson Hinkle. Hey, Jack.
How's it going?
And our traditional question is, what are you guys drinking? I'm drinking some cheapo energy drink from a plastic bottle that's probably going to give me xenoestrogens and mellow out my political views. And what about you?
I'm rocking. I just got a morning coffee and an iced Americano. And rocking a Zin in the upper deck. You guys don't got Zins in Russia, do you? You know what those are?
Zins? Do you mean zinc? Zinc? Like
no,
a vitamin?
No. When I was in Russia, that was one of the things I was like bummed about. They're like little nicotine pouches. And I think in Russia, they banned them.
No. We have nicotine pouches for sure. They're called snus, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but snus is tobacco and Zins are like not with tobacco. It's just like nicotine salt or something.
Ah, yeah. I see. Well, there is Central Asian Nasvai, kind of tobacco mix with chicken shit. And they always have it under their lips. All right. But enough about that. Kirill, are you also drinking coffee?
Yes, I just made myself a cup of coffee.
Okay. So allow me to introduce us to you. I am Nikolai. So we are two Russian guys, two lazy internet journalists or amateur historians. Our channel is kind of an English-speaking hub of everything that concerns Russia, however slightly it might be. And our main difference with RT and Sputnik is that, well, we are far less productive, probably funnier, and we are not funded by any states or any big sponsors, as we are completely crowdfunded and depend on $5 donations on Patreon and Gumroad. But enough about us. So, Jackson, can you briefly introduce yourself and tell the audience what you are all about?
Yeah, so I, of course, I've been following you guys for a while, and especially through the war in Ukraine. I used to be a YouTuber. I don't know what I call myself anymore, just like a political commentator, I guess. But I'm 24 years old, and when I was about like 1920, I started following a lot of political commentators on YouTube, like Jimmy Dore, for example. I'm American, so I followed a lot of like American political commentators, Kyle Kalinske, and I thought that I wanted to do that, so I started my own show. But I was always just very interested in foreign policy. So, you know, when I was starting, I covered a lot of stuff regarding U.S. foreign policy with Venezuela, Syria, because those were really hot button issues during the Trump administration. And he was very in Iran, of course. And then, you know, coming out of that, the Biden administration, I knew it was just going to be an absolute mess. And that's what we got from Afghanistan to Ukraine to everything they're trying to do to China to now what's going on in Gaza. I've just been following that. And I do cover domestic politics, but I'd say I'm mostly focused on foreign policy. And other than that, yeah, I live in Miami and just an average guy, like working out, like going out, enjoying the town. And that's about it. Yeah.
What's the weather like in Miami right now?
It is colder than usual. It's not as bad as Moscow, but you know, it's like 60, high 60s. So it's just like a little bit cloudy out, kind of windy and cold, but usually the weather here is absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, but you, Jackson, are the first guest of our show who is younger than us. But I would never tell that you are just 24, judging by your picture. You look a bit older. So have you ever been told that you look like a 35-year-old man? Or is it part of this whole preppy political wonk vibe? I don't know.
Yeah, I've definitely been told that. And I don't know, maybe it's something in the water out here. But you know what I always think, too? It's like, you brought up that comment earlier about the soyification of like our generation and stuff, drinking out of plastic water bottles and stuff. And it's like, you look at older generations, you look at, you know, our grandparents who fought in World War II, you see photos of them and they look kind of like me when they're about my age. But now we have these like 22, 24-year-old kids that look like they could still be in high school. It's very odd.
Yeah, it's true about the Soviet Union men as well. Well, I guess I'm the victim of the plastic bottles because I look a bit younger than my age. I get asked for a passport when I buy a seat.
Really? Really?
Well, sometimes. not always, but sometimes. Yeah, but all right. So we will not talk too much about the news or ideologies. It will be kind of an up personal interview, perhaps, that will help our listeners understand who you really are. Because judging by your Twitter page, well, it's unclear. And so there are many claims that you are this and that, a provocateur, and of course a Putler's agent, as I'm sure most Americans think that we are as well. So it's time, I guess, to clear things out in an honest conversation. And let's start with some earlier pages of your biography. Wikipedia states that you were big into environmentalist movement back in 2017 or maybe before that. So two questions. What motivated you to be part of this movement? And have you ever read Unda Bomber's manifesto?
No, I haven't read that. But what I'll say is, you know, I grew up in California, which is a very, you know, it's a very liberal state, but I grew up in like a very conservative area of California. And growing up, I didn't have any politics in my life. And my family's not political at all. My town is just a normal small town America. I started to become a very, like active surfer when I was in like middle school or elementary school. I was probably about 11 or 12. When I was just surfing all the time, I saw that we had like a nuclear power plant that was being decommissioned and they were pumping out this, the radioactive water in the ocean that you couldn't surf on certain days because of it. And then there was always trash in the ocean. So I guess it kind of came from a more material grounding, is not sort of any ideological lean that I cared about environmental issues. Then as I started to get a little bit older, getting through high school, that's when the ideological aspect of it came into play. And I started to kind of become indoctrinated with a more liberal globalist mindset when it came to environmental issues, and it became more political. But started off as just, you know, caring about what I was doing and where I was living and seeing that it was kind of gross. And even still, it was a very nice town. Like if I lived in downtown Los Angeles growing up, I mean, that would have been disgusting because that city's just filled with trash. But yeah, it just came from that and kind of went on from there.
Mm-hmm. It's really confusing actually how an all-American Californian young man even became interested in the foreign policy later on at all. Because, well, Americans didn't used to care about things that happen in other continents. It was unheard of. But now things are changing, starting with the Ukrainian conflict and now Palestine. So do you think that Americans started caring more about foreign policy?
For me, you know, like I said, it was looking at, when I started my show, it was really looking at the Trump administration. And I guess my concern for any political issue that I talk about usually on my show or on Twitter, it comes out of a sincere effort, I guess, to expose what I think are obvious lies. And the biggest lies of all are the lies that are used to justify war. And when you couple those lies and how much money they're sending abroad to whatever war or whatever venture, or even sanctioning countries, I mean, doing that to countries all across the world and starving people and destroying economies, it's like, how is it that the American public doesn't, you know, see this and is in a lot of cases actually signing off and supporting these foreign ventures when our country is crumbling? So I think that's why for me, I care about it so much, because I don't want to have anything to do with any country on the face of the earth. Like I think the United States should of course, pursue trade and good relations with other countries, but we shouldn't be doing what we're doing right now, especially when our country's falling apart. And I think if you can effectively highlight that, you can show the American public that, you know, our government doesn't work for us. And from that point, then take them to a position of like, okay, let's all stop these wars and let's focus on our own needs. So that's really why I care about it.
I see. You mentioned that you started your political activism back in high school. And I have noticed that there is a whole race of American high schoolers who go to debate classes or start dressing up in preppy costumes. And by the time they're 20, they establish a whole political commentator career for themselves. They pick a political cause or position that is convenient for their eventual donors or not convenient for anyone, to be edgy to garner attention. For example, Ben Shapiro or Nick Fuentes, I think they're very similar in this background. So were you by any chance a debate kid in school?
I was not, but I think if I had a debate club at my school, I probably would have fit the mold for it. I think that it's probably best that young kids live their lives rather than comment on complex matters, especially related to foreign policy. And, you know, I'm someone who does that, so I guess I'm a hypocrite, but I just spend so much time, you know, learning about the history. And I think that's where everyone should start, is learning about the history, about the world, because there's just so much you could spend your whole life learning history and about one subject or one country, and then that would be it. But I think the other factor there is in some ways it's kind of good when young people talk about politics, because, you know, Tucker Carlson is someone who started to, you know, he started his career very early on, and he got some pretty big issues very wrong, like the Iraq war, for example. He supported the Iraq war for a little bit of time, and he's since apologized for supporting it. And I think, you know, it's good for people to have those mistakes, learn early on, I guess, that they made mistakes. But unfortunately, like you mentioned, there's a lot more people who will not admit when they're wrong, and they will go on to just pursue a career rather than tell the truth. They'll continue to say whatever BS that they're talking about to get those donors for the Daily Wire or whatever it may be. And that's the most dangerous thing of all, when you treat it more like a career where you need to have investors and you need to have like powerful allies and stuff. Like, I really don't have any friends in politics. I've only got a few. You know, I think that's how you should look at it.
Mm-hmm. Who are your friends in politics?
Haas of the Infrared Show is one of them. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's someone who's introduced Dugin to me, and he's just been my closest ally throughout the past several years. And we connected initially after I debated a popular liberal YouTuber named Vosh about the OPCW cover-up in Douma, Syria. You know, Jimmy Dore is another one. He's a close friend of mine. But really, beyond that, those are the only two guys I trust, Haas and Jimmy Dore. Other than that, I you know, I have allies, I guess, but I don't trust anyone.
Mm-hmm. As far as I know, Jimmy Dore is a former liberal or liberal socialist, I'm not sure, who kind of divorced himself from the Young Turks and started his own thing. And he's also this kind of weird ideological mix of, well, left and right, you know. But for now, enough about America. We're a Russian podcast. Please share your first impression of Russia. What was it? Be honest. Even if it is a Gopnik meme from 10 years ago or Rambo movie.
Well, my first impression was Moscow. And it was that I definitely need to come back here as many times as possible in my life, because I loved it so much. And I didn't think I was going to, I thought I was going to like it, but I didn't think I was going to like love it the way I did. Yeah. And I haven't been to a ton of places outside of the United States, but I've been to a handful, and it was, as far as like, as far as a city goes, as far as, you know, not a vacation travel destination like Bali, for example, but like an actual city, it was my favorite place I've ever been. I mean, it was so clean. The streets were, you know, not filled with homeless people. The architecture was incredible. The nightlife was amazing. The food was really the best I've ever had. The people were funny and nice. And I just loved it. St. Petersburg, I didn't like as much, but I still liked it a lot. But I feel like it was a bit more, like less investment was put into, has been put into St. Petersburg recently. But I really loved Moscow, and Russia was great.
Mm-hmm. And there are more hobos in Peter as well. Yeah, actually, some even call all Peter citizens hobos. It's a nickname for Peter dwellers. But yeah, you like Moscow. It's interesting when I think there is a factor that people are so amazed by Moscow because they don't know what to expect, because you have high expectations for like Paris, what is it in English?
Paris.
Yeah, like, you know, but when you actually go there, it's full of jurors and homeless people, and you're kind of disappointed. And with Moscow, what were like your childhood image of Moscow like?
I guess my childhood image of Moscow, really as an American, you don't think about Russia that much. As a young person at all, really. But I think the only images I've ever had painted for me about Russia were, I think there's a Disney film about Anya,
Anastasia. Yeah.
Yeah. Anastasia, she's like the long lost daughter of the Tsar's family during the revolution. And that kind of painted a very beautiful picture of Russia, like one that's obviously fantastical, like a fantasy. But honestly, it lived up to that. It was quite special. Everything was just when Americans asked me what I thought about it, the only word I could really use to describe Russia was, the major cities. We went through some of the more or less populated regions, but as far as the major cities go, it was very fancy, and in like a real fancy, like what Paris probably used to be years and years and years ago. And I just fell in love with it. The only thing I'll say is the young people in Russia, it was kind of odd because there was a lot of young people who were very patriotic and kind of fit mm-hmm. the mold of what I would define as a fancy and educated class. Even if they themselves were not wealthy in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, they dressed nice. They were respectful. And then we went out to like a club. And mm-hmm. that was very odd because everyone was just trying to, it felt like everyone was trying to act like they lived in Los Angeles or something. Mm-hmm. And the way they talked, the way they acted, it felt very fake. That was a little bit weird. There's a little bit of Western influence in some of the younger generation.
Well, for sure. But clubs, well, normal people really don't go to clubs nowadays, right? It's a very weird place to go to. But what didn't you like about Moscow? Maybe low level of English proficiency or maybe not enough high rises. What was it?
Well, the one funny thing was whenever I'd order an iced Americano, which is my favorite coffee drink, just like basically, you know, iced with water and an espresso shot, no one knew what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And they don't serve that there. So they just mix it, right? Yeah, or they don't, you guys don't do iced drinks a whole lot. And it's not just Russia. When I was in Turkey, it was the same thing. They always want to serve hot drinks. So you guys don't have a lot of iced drinks from what I saw. Maybe it's because it's so cold there already. But that was interesting. Low English proficiency, of course. But I, you know, you get by. Just Google Translate. It's very easy to get around. And I don't know, there wasn't a whole lot that I disliked about Moscow, I guess. It was a great place to visit. The weather towards the end was not ideal. It was starting to get cold. And I heard that Russia's had very heavy snow this winter. So maybe that's part of that. But no, I mean, I loved it.
Have you tried a rough coffee?
Have I tried what?
A rough coffee. Rough coffee.
Half coffee?
Rough. It's I think pretty much the only coffee drink that was actually invented in Russia. It's not Russia is not really a coffee country.
Tea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it used to be like 20 years ago. I mean, there are no coffee places at all. That was the authentic Russia. Now, as you say, there is a lot of Western influence in good and bad one. Probably it's good to have coffee and good coffee at that. But actually, very good trait that we don't have high English proficiency. But I'm not sure. Do you think that high English proficiency always translates to Los Angelification of the people, or it's possible to avoid?
I think that you know, Russian culture should be celebrated, and I think that, you know, of course, you know, I think America has a lot more to learn about Russia than Russia has to learn from America. And I don't think that low English proficiency is necessarily a problem, especially the way that the world is headed. It seems like more and more people are probably learning Russian in developing countries than English at this point. But
probably not, but yeah.
Well, in Africa, for example, it's pretty, from what I see, it's just Russia's popping off all over the place.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't think it's a problem. It's only a problem if you're an American traveling there and you want to talk to some of the Russian beauties in Moscow, because it's that was one other thing. The level of absolutely stunning women everywhere in Russia, just mainly in Moscow. St. Petersburg was kind of like dark and goth, but in Moscow, it was insane. There was hot women on every street corner. It was crazy. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. Well, thinner too. There is a huge boom and trend on being extremely thin. Well, it's not only in Russia, but I think Moscow especially, because it's traversable by foot and the metro station. So you don't really need to own a car in Moscow. And that burns some calories. As to the classical Russian culture, have you read Dostoevsky or Tolstoy?
I haven't, but I've it's been recommended to me. I haven't. I like to read a lot of biographies and history related books that are, I guess, not stories as much, but I've never read Dostoevsky or Tolstoy, but I intend to do so at some point. But there's honestly, it's not just Russian like literature that's so incredible. I mean, you could go to, we went to the opera, we went to the ballet there. I mean, it's just, it's endless. I've seen a good chunk of Russian cinema. We went to the place where they filmed, I think it's called, something to do with like a streetcar or railway or something like that. I saw the movie for free on YouTube, but we went to the place where they filmed that movie. It was pretty cool. There's just so much to be proud of in Russian culture. And I feel like in America, we really only know the main authors and that's it. We only know the literature, but there's so much, and there's so much that is even celebrated in American culture that we don't know is Russian. We just kind of have adopted it. Like last night I went and saw the Nutcracker at the Miami City Ballet. In a few months, they're going to be doing Swan Lake. And I think most Americans probably don't even know that these are of Russian origin.
Yeah. Well, and the Hollywood as well was guided by Stanislavski's method, etc. But as to your posting career, so prior to October 2023, you were commenting on Russian-Ukrainian war. And the moment when Hamas made its first move, with paragliders, rave concerts, etc., you have completely switched your attention to Palestine. And that move made you more famous on Twitter. You quadrupled your audience or something. Personally, it made your timeline unreadable to me because it's like Palestinian doctor Al-Hamidi was killed by the Zionist pigs. And I go like, oh, sorry, that happened. And that's why I don't comment on the conflict too much because, well, frankly, it's of no interest to me. But what is it to you, a personal vendetta or a job opportunity?
Well, for me, like I've actually followed the plight of Palestinians longer than I've been aware of, you know, the issues in the Donbass. And so I've followed it for years, really since I started my show, because that's an issue that is, I guess, closer to America because of the influence of Zionists in American culture and politics. And also just how much money we send to Israel every year. So that's something more Americans are familiar with. And for me, you know, I see it as one and the same. It's like, okay, the US is sending money, doing trainings with Ukrainian special forces, cooing the Ukrainian government to kill innocent civilians in the Donbass. That's bad. You know, 15,000 killed over 8 years. That's bad. Or the U.S. sending billions to Israel to kill 15,000 people in 2 months, that is also bad. So it's a very big issue because I think, of course, with in Alexander Dugin's, I believe it's his most recent book, it's The Great Awakening versus The Great Reset. He talks about how, you know, there is this great awakening that's taking place, not just with the MAGA movement in the US, not just with the anti-EU sentiments in Europe, not just with the project of the Communist Party of China, but also, of course, with Russia and the way in which Putin has kind of just marched on in. And he looks like he's the only one with balls on the global stage right now doing what he's doing, standing up to the West. But now we have a second domino that has fallen in this great awakening. And I do believe that's the great awakening that's now taking place, a subsect of it that's now taking place in the Middle East. And I think it would be surprising if this rages on for too much longer and we don't start to see some other dominoes falling, like Yemen, for example, getting involved, or Hezbollah getting involved. So I just think it's another part of this whole great awakening. And, you know, I don't talk about Russia as much anymore because the writing was on the wall from the first several months. I mean, everyone knew how that was going to end. Really, from the first day, you know, I was asked, how is this going to, I was on Jimmy Dore's show, and it was like the first week of the SMO. And he said, how do you think this is going to end? And I said, I think it's going to end however Putin wants it to end. So at a certain time, it just kind of becomes repetitive talking about it. It's like, yeah, Russia took another city. Russia did this. Russia. It's like, okay, we know how this is going to end. History is determined with regard to this matter. Their fate is sealed. What is going to happen next? And the next big thing is the Middle East. And we'll see where it goes next. Maybe Taiwan, maybe Africa eventually. Who knows? But this is the next big domino that's fallen.
Well, I'm not sure that the fate is sealed. And this is where the free segment of our podcast ends. Just admit it, you are hooked, and you need to learn more to flex your newly acquired esoteric knowledge on a random art hole that you have a crush on. Free yourself from tedious American monoculture and subscribe to Russians with Attitude to get full access to weekly episodes from the forbidden part of the world. Thank you.